This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome back to the All Souls Podcast. This is episode 12. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
And I think we're back, Summer.
I mean, I feel like I'm well rested.
Oh my goodness.
From what unintentionally became a year off.
Yes, we have not pod faded, and we've gotten a lot of feedback. When are you guys coming back? Oh, we're coming back. We couldn't set a date to it because we didn't have a date. We had to see when our lives and other commitments, etc., which I know we all have, kind of evened out, and then we could schedule it and claim time and then come up with some, not just do a one-off though. We wanted to be able to find a way to be consistent. So we believe
we needed a sustainable schedule.
Yeah. And so, not just doing it when we could, which was kind of as it was before. I don't even know. I think we were like, I'd have to go back and look. I don't think we were once a month. I think it was once every few weeks. I don't think it was regular though. And now we believe we have a system to prep, to record the content, to get the content edited, and then to upload it. All of that, the whole system. And our goal is to produce 2 shows a month. So we will be biweekly. That is our goal.
Yes, it is a doable goal, I think. I think with all of the planning and prepping and things that we've had numerous sit downs and talks about and discussions, I think that we've come up with a plan that's going to work. So I'm excited. I've missed this book.
I've missed the book too. I've missed Jennifer Iketa's voice and Deb's writing. And so as Summer said, we believe we have a system, and the curious part about that scheduling thing we're doing is that it's setting us up for success to record content. Now, the goal is to get that content also out to you twice a month, but we know we are pretty solid on the recording part, the getting the content, and we have the goal of the twice monthly publishing, and that's what our goal is right now. So if there's anything, a wiggle room, like if it's a day or so off, we're not going to call it, like we're not going to say a Saturday, we're not going to say a Sunday. It will likely be on the weekend though, every 2 weeks, but on a weekend day, until or unless we can settle into some kind of schedule. Right now, that's what we're up against. And I think that's a good first shot. Now, before we go on, we don't really have any announcements.
But it's been a year. There's a lot of stuff that's gone down.
Okay, that's true. So we're not the news source. We're not a news source. Now that we're going to plan to be coming back to you regularly, of course we will bring you anything. And you will have read it or heard it before we bring it to you, most likely, as it is with delayed media. But we'll definitely outline it. Anything that's come out from Deb regarding the production, regarding the script, regarding anything of the series, anything she's writing, as well as anything with production. Now, Summer, we started this podcast because it was, at the time, that was what it was linked with, saying that we were looking forward to the BBC production.
It's no longer with BBC.
Since it is, exactly. So since we took our hiatus, it is no longer with BBC. It is with Bad Wolf TV. And I believe that's a production company based out of Wales and run by 2 females, if I'm not mistaken. And there has been, I think, a producer linked with it. And the best way to stay on top of it, besides obviously listening to us and the other podcasts out there and reading all the wonderful fan sites, is probably obviously following Deb on Facebook, Twitter, etc. But the best way that I've seen that to get the most up-to-date stuff is to subscribe to Deb's newsletter. I think it's called, I want to say The Bugle.
No, it's like a...
But I think I'm wrong. It's like a picture of someone like blowing a horn, right? Okay, somewhere I'll get it. So that, I believe, comes out once a month. And she updates everything. She updates what she's been doing, the writing, The Serpent's Mirror, the next book, or anything in the series that she can talk about. And then, of course, the TV updates, whether it's casting or scripts or production. Now, she also clearly says that anything regarding any like big news regarding the television production will not be coming from her. It will come from the production. So, as we all are itching for news, obviously go follow Bad Wolf TV on Twitter. They're on Instagram. I don't believe they've only posted once and it's been a few years, but you don't know if things may go up there once they become more active. But yeah, so it's still in the production phase or pre-production. And from what I understand, the last time her newsletter mentioned that they were working on casting the main leads. So that would be Diana and Matthew. And that just gave me some kind of itchy twitchy. I am so excited. I can't imagine. I mean, I know it's been years. Like, it's magical. So if someone like finds our podcast 5 years from now and listens to episode 11 and then episode 12, and then they go, oh, well, this is a heavy, heavy, heavy informational podcast. Well, yeah. And we're doing this all from our minds, from my memory. I'm not reading anything. I'm recalling what I read in Deb's most recent update. And that's actually, that gives us good fodder for upcoming episodes. So the episode that comes out most closely or closely to her next newsletter, then that's a great thing, a great topic to be an announcement as well. So okay, we'll include things like that.
It's called The Blast.
I knew it was a B.
And I think I said boomer blast.
I said bugle. Isn't there a picture of someone blowing a horn?
No, but there's a picture of a horn. No, it's a rabbit
blowing a horn while sitting on leaves. Okay.
So I do have a good mental picture of what was there, just had the wrong word, but we both had a B word in our heads. There are Deb's updates, which are going to be the most complete and most and the heaviest, right? That's where we're going to get the most information. And of course, following production, once those start to come out, they'll come out from them. And another update, which was, I think, about a month ago, I think it either was late January or early February, and that is another All Souls Con. 2017.
So exciting. And it's going to be in New Orleans, people.
Oh my gosh. I mean, LA is great because it's like in our backyard, even though it's a drive, it's like in our backyard. But New Orleans, oh, how perfectly magical, wonderful, freaky voodoo is that? That's amazing. Whenever I think of New Orleans, I think of that series or the season of American Horror Story. What was it called? Witches?
The Coven.
Coven. Oh my gosh. That was my favorite. I think that was my favorite season of all of them so far. The one with the clown, I just can't do clowns, so I couldn't watch that. The circus one, I couldn't do it. But I loved Coven. That was freaky. They're all freaky, but that was so good. So that's exciting. And there is a Facebook group, of course, the Mothership, the All Souls Discussion Group. There's also the Facebook group recently created for All Souls attendees, so you can get updates through there. Laura and the team behind All Souls Con puts a lot of updates throughout there. And is there anything I'm missing?
I think we also recently heard that Deb is definitely going to be at Comic-Con this year.
That's right. I just pray to the baby Jesus that we're able to see her. That's all.
I know, right?
Oh my goodness. So yes, that's true. So that's something that probably will end up in one of Deb's updates, but it came out after her blast. Yeah, that was actually given to us by Comic-Con. So I think that's a heap of announcements. And as always, you can find us at our website, allsoulspod.com, on Instagram, at allsoulspod, on Twitter, at allsoulspod. Is there anything I'm forgetting, Sam?
No, I don't think so. So with that, let's go on to our
previously recorded audio. It's going to sound odd to have another little intro, but we wanted to do this real time or almost real time so that you guys could hear from us literally today. This is being recorded. Summer and I are recording this the day we're getting this out. So you have a little bit of us from today and you have the rest of us plus a friend who joined us from about a year ago. So get your favorite cup of tea, cuddle up with your favorite familiar and enjoy our next episode. Welcome, All Souls Trilogy fans. This is episode 12 of the All Souls podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
And I'm Abby.
You know that's what? Not very nice. That was so like Hamilton for me for the episode, the song in the musical when they introduced the three main Skylar sisters. And they have the two main ones, Angelica and Eliza, who have these like beautiful melodical lines. They're like, Angelica, Eliza, and Peggy. And like, she's like, and Peggy.
And you know what you just reminded me of?
What?
That Saturday Night Live skit where they say,
and I'm Doreen or whatever it is.
And Doris and Stephanie.
And the one with the baby. And the one with the baby hands. Yeah. Same thing.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. Okay.
On this week's episode, we will be discussing Chapter 11 from A Discovery of Witches.
Chapter 10 ends with Diana, safe back in her rooms, calling Matthew after what had happened with Peter Knox. She knows she can't handle things on her own now, so she needs to call in the big guns. Chapter 11 finds Diana having trouble sleeping. She's on her sofa, and then the bed. She can't get comfortable, can't get still, can't sleep. The phone is always at her side. She's deeply unsettled by the thought that witches may have murdered her parents.
May have? I thought it was made pretty clear in the last episode.
It was.
And I mean chapter.
Chapter. And both.
I feel like there was always.
Julian tells her that, right?
Yeah.
Julian says it. Peter Knox, they don't talk about it.
Julian said it. Was it the last chapter or the chapter before?
I think it was the last chapter.
Yeah. It was real recent.
But Peter Knox didn't say that.
No, but he did imply that they were...
Oh, that they can't keep secrets and that kind of thing. Okay.
I think there was always something in the back of Diana's mind, though, that they were just trying to scare her and that that couldn't have possibly been true.
Exactly. I think that's why she kind of, I don't say took it, but that's why she didn't freak out as much as she may have. She's like, look, I know what happened. You're just trying to scare me. This is not possible. Witches wouldn't do that to other witches.
Well, but also, I mean... What happened to them was so horrific anyway that it almost is irrelevant who did it. She's not close enough. The only witches she's close to are Em and Sarah. So for an outsider bunch of witches to have done something horrible, I mean, it was just like anybody
she
else.
She can't comprehend it.
No, she can't. Yeah, but it could have been anyone. And no one doing it would have made it worse. It was still awful. So even pinpointing exactly which, you know, creature group had a part in it wouldn't have made it better.
No, but I think it does make it worse because of what it means. But yeah, it doesn't. It's not. It can't really.
It doesn't bring him back. Anymore. I mean, it doesn't bring him back or no, anything. So
dead, they're kind of dead.
No, but it just implies that with a group that you would always consider yourself safe with, you are no longer safe. Mm-hmm. You know, to find out that someone in your extended family would do something so horrible to someone that they would consider their own means they would do the same to you.
I mean, didn't Jillian call her in the last episode or in at least one chapter, her sister?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She called her sister. I'm like, yeah.
It almost felt ironic, though. She's like.
It could have been.
Your sister.
I'm here. I'm your sister. I'm here. Yeah, no. Walk away, dude. So Diana's. Because she's still mentally processing this whole thing about witches potentially having murdered her parents. Her entire worldview is shaken with this knowledge because witches just don't do this to other witches. Her history is possibly being rewritten, her personal family history. She tries to focus on the manuscript and Peter Knox. But unable to rest, she goes to the library early. She gets there early and is ready there waiting for it when it opens. Her phone is still with her. She has it on vibrate, and Deb goes out of her way to say that this is something that normally bugs Diana. She doesn't like it when people are in there having all, you know, all their machines, their
higgledy-piggledy technology.
Exactly. All their tech, all their different things, their iPods, their phones, their whatever.
Well, they're not there for tech. They're going to this, like, library that's full of, like, so many old books that you just can't see anywhere else. And why would you want to bring any kind of a distraction to that?
Well, exactly.
But I'm sure that also feeds into probably maybe how Deb also feels about students having cell phones in class.
Oh, that's a good question. Or in libraries. I mean, she's probably done hours upon hours of research with manuscripts before, taking notes. And I have done that, not nowhere near as much as she has, but I have done that where you have the manuscript where you have to wear, I don't think I had to wear gloves, but
Old manuscripts.
Oh, they were old, but we were in a room. We had to go, you know,
put our stuff in an outer room, like in a cubby, and we were allowed to bring, like, you know, pencils and paper and stuff to take notes with. And then we were given what's called, I think I described in a different episode before, what's called a snake. Like, that is like a lead coil that you can put in any shape you want, because like a snake, you can move it around. It's flexible, but it's heavy. And you put it on the book so that you're not having to lean on it with your arm and get your body oils on it, but it holds it open for you.
How many snakes have you tried to move around?
Just whatever one they gave me at one time.
Well, it's like a snake. You just, like, just move it around.
But, I mean, I've worked with them, and I've taken notes, and I've looked at corners, and I measured, and I've done all the stuff that you do. Not as much, but I've done it. And I can't imagine someone in there, because it's where I was such a small room and limited space. I don't think they would have let me take myself. You know, or if you do, it's off or it's on silent. It's not vibrating. And if you're seen to have that being done, people are going to be giving you the nasty eye. It's so distracting. You know, you're in there trying to concentrate on this, and it's in Latin. You're trying to maybe transcribe it no.
Even thinking about just the vibration of a phone on like a wooden table, oh, totally. And how loud that would be. I mean, working in theater and video production, it's a huge pet peeve of mine. You know, if you're in a video shoot and somebody's vibrated phone goes off, like, you can hear that through the microphones, through the boom mic. And then same thing in the theater, when you're at a moment and it's so quiet, and think about how quiet the library is, and all of a sudden you hear this, I mean, it would be like an alarm going off.
Well, not
yeah,
only
I'm
that.
Right there with her. It's annoying.
But I was at lunch today, and the person I was having lunch with had their phone on the table, and it was on silent, but it buzzed, and it literally vibrated the entire table. Like, I had my hand leaning on the table, and I was like, what the heck just happened? Like, it was real distracting. So
you should never go out with him again.
I won't.
At 10:30, Peter Knox comes in. She's in the reading room. Peter Knox comes in. Now, she leaves the room briefly to see if, or to make sure, that Miriam is still there, and she is, and Miriam seems upset. They discuss how ballsy Knox is by straight up going into that reading room. She can't believe, like, God, that witch went in there and sat right there. And Miriam says something that we will come to find, at least in my characterization of her, is uncharacteristic for her. She says she wishes she were something else.
She wishes she were bigger.
She wishes she were something else. Bigger. This is someone that we, without giving any spoilers, I don't think, she's so put together, so professional in what she, in her carriage, so just put together to me is how I think about her. I would never imagine a character like Miriam wishing she were anything than what she was. She was the fulfillment of a vampire in that little body. She is perfect in what she is. You know, we think of Miriam, we think of how she is. And part of her, not her will, but part of her character, I would not put on a list of her character attributes. Wanting to be or wishing she could be something else. But I guess it could go back to this probably, to me, if anything, doesn't speak of her vampire-ness, but of her previous humanness. She, you know, because we don't know exactly how old she is, but she probably grew up. I've never been a tiny petite person, but I could imagine a tiny petite person may wish, especially human, may wish they had.
You were when you were like three
or
four.
Well, I don't mean that. I mean as an adult. Yeah, for all of those 8 years.
I think that she never lets her diminutive stature ever get in the way of how powerful she is, and she kind of owns it. And no one ever is not intimidated by her, even as small as she is. So for her to have wished to have been bigger, it must have just been that she wanted to be a more imposing figure to Peter Knox, because Peter Knox was just not remotely put off by her at all, and she just wanted to be more.
Which speaks to Peter Knox's character too, you know, that he's not put off by her, and that he is ballsy, you know, to go in there in the reading room and everything, and
he thinks very highly of himself.
Yeah.
So Matthew arrives. Diana notes his entry into the room, not by the usual icy patches on her back that she feels from a vampire looking at her, but, quote, touches of snowflakes all along my hair, shoulders, and back, as if he were checking quickly to make sure I was all in one piece, unquote. How beautiful is that? Just the description, the fact that he did it, you can tell just by the feel of the of the snowflake. I mean, it's snowflakes now and not icy patches. I mean, just the language that Deb uses is gorgeous. And snowflakes are a lot lighter, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, you don't think of heavy snowflakes. Snowflakes are a lot lighter than a patch of ice. So that's, and also less dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, she's effectively turned him from like a tiger to like a pussycat.
Every time I get chill bumps now, I want to think that there's a vampire looking at me.
There is. I love it. There is. There has to be. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that.
I like that so much better than someone walked over your grave.
Though if it was a vampire, he might have been plotting your death.
As long as he makes out with me first.
Standards. They're important.
So because she wasn't sure it was him, because her obviously her back is to him, she's feeling all these chilly bumps on her back, and it may could have been Miriam, she hesitated turning around. And when she finally did turn around and saw him, quote, her heart gave a single loud thump, unquote.
Matthew, that though, sounds uncomfortable.
Like thump, one thump?
Just one. And it's loud. Like,
I wonder what the person sitting next to her
I know what that feels like, though.
And just
it feels
one?
Like it beats in your stomach almost.
But just one. Like, I've had moments where, like, all of a sudden you start to feel your heart. You actually actively feel it as opposed to just kind of happening and you're being.
Yeah, but that's from running, not from seeing a cute boy.
I've never felt one thump in my heart. Just one, like a palpitation that just kind of goes dunk.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's what it would be like. Like, it skips a beat. Almost, so the next one is just harder.
Now, Matthew only had eyes for Knox. They kept it together there in front of him, though. And he was not a happy camper about Knox, obviously. And Diana and Matthew agree to chat about things later at the end of the day. Diana notices he's fingering something. There's a bump just below his sternum, and he's kind of fingering it through his sweater. And when they talk about their plans for later that evening, they agree to go to yoga. Now, he offers to work next to her, but she says, no, it's not necessary. And also, his scent is powerful and dizzying to her. So they affect each other. It's not just her, although his are much stronger than hers, but he definitely affects her. At lunchtime, Matthew coughs, and this is a sign that Miriam to follow her to lunch. And it's funny how Miriam, gets up like, fine, I am going. And like, he makes sure that, you know, someone like Peter Knox does not follow her to lunch. So, gotta keep that girl safe. When the end of the day finally does come, Diana is more than ready to get going. Matthew accompanies her downstairs, and she goes back to college to quickly get ready for yoga, and then he meets her. As she gets into the car, he breathes in sharply. She's again wondering what messages her body is sending him. Likely, obviously, it's something he's smelling. So, could you imagine? And it's like a relationship is developing. Every time you get in the car with someone or you're around someone that they're like, they inhale deeply and you're like, oh my God, what did my funk just tell him? Or what did my this just tell him? You know, that's got to be like, you got to get used to that. That's a little off-putting. Even if it's not negative, you're always wondering.
I will say, one thing that I've really enjoyed about this book is how much she does dote on the sense of smell. I'm a very olfactory centered person. Like, I'm very in touch with my sense of smell. It's very acute and it's actually obnoxious at times. But like, I remember my high school boyfriend smelled like fresh apple peels to me, but it was so specific. And now every time I smell an apple, I think about him. But yeah, like, I think it's interesting because, you know, sometimes you can smell people's pheromones sometimes. Like, there's a certain sweetness, I think, to a person when they start to kind of get excited. And, yeah, but I love that she dotes on that so much because I can't relate to their, you know, their level. And I've never smelled a man that smelled like cloves and cinnamon, or I'll tell you right now, he would be captured by me.
Rolled up and smoked like a clove cigarette.
Well, what's funny is, okay, so as another oils enthusiast, we have a doTERRA and a Young Living in one room and we're existing and it's amazing. But in my mind, he smells like On Guard or your version is Thieves.
Oh, gosh.
Don't you think so? Yeah. And that to me smells like fall and everything good. I want a Matthew-scented candle.
Oh, my gosh. I would not be surprised if those existed.
Somebody get on that.
I'm sure they will.
I mean, couldn't you just melt some wax and throw some On Guard in it?
I wanted to say Matthew scented candle.
I mean, I've got a Sharpie.
Just add a sound bite. It'll say Matthew
scented candle.
Yeah, you better not say it like that.
Matthew scented candle.
I want to be like Matthew scented candle. Why can't it be more masculine? But it's British too, right? We'll have Jennifer come in and say it.
The Oxford British.
Yeah. I'm not going to pretend I know how to do that, but Jennifer Higata can do it.
Yeah, she does pretty well.
So as they're in traffic, getting out of Oxford in the car, she asks Matthew how Scotland was. He's very monosyllabic. He says, fine. Then she says that Miriam had told her that he was off hunting. He's not happy that Miriam is telling her his business. And we find out that's more of the rules she's learning. Some things should not be discussed in mixed company. They both admit to not having been alone. I wonder if she's curious if there were another woman.
Of course she is. What woman wouldn't think that?
I never thought about it. Well, because they're not a thing.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I, but
you can't stop that thought.
First read-throughs, I never thought that. I'm like, oh.
Well, they're not a thing. But there is a thing between them.
Matthew says that if he'd known Peter Knox was the one who had been bothering her, he never would have left Oxford. And on Diana's part, the confession begins to tumble out. Diana says that she recognizes and she admits that indeed she does use magic.
That's a big step for Diana.
Oh my gosh. Seriously. Even if it's not on purpose, she still does it. She says, quote, I've never kept the magic out of my life. I've been using it in my work without realizing it. It's in everything. I've been fooling myself for years, unquote. And she admits she's scared. And Matthew touches her knee and says, I know. Now, Matthew's answer to her question about what there is to do about this whole thing is, quote, we'll figure it out. And not only do I love his answer, but I love that he uses, like, it's basically he's saying it's going to be okay. We'll figure something out. He uses the first person plural here. He calls them a we. And I wrote, is there a we?
She does that earlier in the chapter, though, when he asks about Peter Knox, and she said, nothing we can't handle.
I just like little flutterbys. I love it. Then they get ready to go to yoga. Now, Matthew's hesitating to tell her something. He was hanging with his old friend, Hamish, he says, and Diana recognizes the name immediately. She'd apparently heard about it in the news. There's some news stories that said that this man named Hamish Osborne might be running for parliament so that he could be put in a certain the exchequer of finance or some financial like government role. And Matthew says, no, he wouldn't be. And we learn of another potential headline or rumor, whatever, that Diana may have heard. So she goes, oh, so he is gay. And Matthew is not very amused, but he says, yes, he is. But he's also, more importantly, a demon. And creatures do not participate in human politics or religion, we learn. All these rules. She makes a comment about Hamish's financial abilities, and Matthew says, yeah, he's good at figuring things out in that way, money-wise, but also he's good at finding things out, period. And he says it like an answer, like, that's why I went. He's good at helping find things out, period. He's like my go-to person. When he says this, Diana's confused, and to her confusion, he says, you left a sweater in my car? He can't keep the sweater because her scent was all over it and thus all over his car, so he had to purge it, and then he had to escape her area.
What?
Escape Oxford.
Was he in her area?
It's so, the gesture that you made that got me.
Because she said it was right around her crotchal region. It was like a circle above her crotchal region with her hand.
Oxford, okay? He had to get out
of it. Is that what you call it? Oxford?
That's a pretty highbrow name.
How's Oxford, Ginger?
I've never been there.
Aw, poor Oxford.
So he had to escape. He had to get out of... I almost said it again. He had to get out of Oxford. He had to get away from her so he could figure things out. And Hamish helps him figure things out, helps him handle things, helps him get to the bottom of things. He couldn't stop thinking about her, and that scared him. Deb writes of Diana, quote, "My heart was beating irregularly, and the reduced blood flow slowed my mental processes," unquote. Diana then understood. He's afraid he may hurt her. Or at least he was. And she's relieved he didn't leave because of what had happened the week before. Rather, he had left because of her safety, potential safety. He wanted to figure things out, like what's going on with him, and, oh my gosh, I don't want to hurt her, so I need to go figure things out.
So he didn't leave because he was mad at her. He left because he likes her.
And doesn't want to hurt her. Everything
he admitted to Hamish, though, that he was falling in love with her.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was Hamish's mental, like, you know, because we're reading, we can see into his thoughts, or if it was something Matthew said, but didn't the word mate come out? I think it was Hamish, but I could be wrong.
Did you say you're mating?
Mating behavior, something like that. Deb calls this their first honest exchange of information, and it had altered things between them. After yoga class, she sees a silver object around his neck tied to a leather cord. It was what he had been kind of touching through his sweater earlier that day. We learn it's a pilgrim's badge. Diana recognizes it. It's an ampulla from Bethany, shaped like a coffin, and it contained a few drops of holy water. And Diana recognized the name. It was the place Christ had resurrected Lazarus. Now, Diana knows why Christians go on pilgrimage. She may have been raised pagan, but she is a highly educated woman, and she knows that Christians do this to atone for their sins. Matthew's mystery factor keeps growing, doesn't it? So here's a vampire who is, what, don't know how old exactly, at least a few hundred years old, and he's got something that's potentially very old around his neck. And he seems to be religious, so this seems to be kind of growing. After yoga, Diana tells Matthew what had happened. Knox wants the manuscript. Agatha Wilson wants the manuscript. And Matthew wants it. And she says it's under a spell. And Matthew says that he knows this. Just then, a white owl swoops down. And she, like any, well, she's not human, but like any person would, except maybe a vampire, reflexively flinches. Her adrenaline is surging from the close call, and she panics. Matthew immediately opens the door to the car and pushes her into the seat. This is the back seat. He bends her over, so like head between her knees, and she vomits out on the gravel, and Matthew tucks a piece of hair behind her ear. It's a very human thing, but he didn't have to do that. So obviously that's a sign he does care for her. He tells her, quote, "You're safe," unquote. And she apologizes to him for the mess. She admits to the panic that had been in her since the night before, and Matthew says, "I'm taking you straight home." We find out that this doesn't happen often to Diana, at least not since her childhood. And yes, he can smell her adrenaline. She admits to the exercising, etc., to help lower the adrenaline in her body because she didn't like taking drugs. They made her feel fuzzy or something like that.
And remember, she didn't exercise that morning or eat breakfast because she was so Twitter-pated.
Exactly. Now, Matthew asks her why she called him. Not the reason for the call, but why did she reach out to him specifically and not a human or a witch friend? The truth? Diana really doesn't have anyone else. And her aunts were far away, and she didn't want to drag them into this for something that she felt was her responsibility and her boo-boo. She asks, "Should I not have called you?" And Matthew's honest. He says, "I don't know. The last time they had spoken, she was saying that witches and vampires couldn't be friends. And then next time he looks, she's calling him." But that was Friday, and she is clear on one thing. She'd choose Matthew over Knox any day. Matthew tells her that vampires are never completely to be trusted around warm bloods. She tells him about Knox's warning, and that he invaded her head, no less, to be careful around Matthew. And Matthew warns her, vampires are not to be romanticized. It seems they are now, quote, friends. Diana says, quote, "Friends tell each other the truth, even when it's difficult," unquote. Matthew says that vampires aren't very good at friendship, and that vampire relationships are complicated. They can be protective, vampires can, and possessive. And she says, quote, a little protectiveness sounds pretty good to me about right now, unquote. And Matthew's eyes at her saying this hold a look of raw vulnerability. As he drops her off at her apartments, he checks carefully to make sure nothing of hers is left in the car. No hair ribbon, no rubber band, no sweater, no nothing. And there's more she has to tell Matthew. They have not discussed everything. The thing about her parents, everything. The latter says it can wait and promises that Knox won't get near her again. And he's again touching his ampulla around his neck. Diana is feeling this pull, whether it's just a personal or professional one, or truly just to share the rest of the story with him. They need time alone, away from the library and away from other creatures. She invites him to dinner the next night, and Matthew is shocked. His face freezes, but then he says he would like that. He gives her a shy grin, which I find incredibly sweet, and when she asks him what he eats, he says, I'm omnivorous. He promises to see her at Duke Humphrey's the next day, and he says he won't leave the grounds that night until she's out of his sight. She walks to her apartments, muttering, vampires.
I mutter that all the time.
So I really wanted the White Owl to deliver...
A Hogwarts letter?
A Hogwarts letter to her.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
The three of us here don't have Diana's adrenaline. I don't think poisoning, but adrenaline issue. But have you guys ever felt the need to like, okay, I need to go for a walk. I need to go for a run. I need to go move myself in some fashion to get rid of that pent up whatever or whatever. Have you ever felt anything like that?
Absolutely. I don't know that I'd do so much exercise to get rid of it though. I'd probably be a lot smaller if I did. I think I just eat. But yeah. No, the adrenaline and the anxiety is something that if you let it build up, you know, it can get overwhelming. And I don't know that it's ever made me have a full-blown panic attack and throw up outside of somebody's car. But
yet,
I'm also not a witch.
There is tomorrow.
There is tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Will it be your car? Tomorrow.
I hope. Outside, please. I'll pull over. You just let me know.
I love you. Or we're friends. Tomorrow.
We're friends.
Well, that's what they say. They haven't said the L word.
I feel like it was a little funny how he kind of threw it in her face, the whole, I thought you said witches and vampires can't be friends.
Oh, he totally did.
Because obviously at this point...
They're friends.
Friendly. You know, and their things are working out. There is a little part of me, though, and maybe this is just my bitterness in dating.
He keeps
disclaiming... about vampires and how dangerous they are, and you shouldn't romanticize vampires. It's like he's saying, you know, we're dangerous, we're this, we're that, it's a problem. Yeah. You know, I'm telling you this now so that should anything ever happen later, he's off the hook.
I can tell you I told you so.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not my fault. I warned you up front. Well, I think that was... It was the shortest chat. Probably the shortest one you've had so far.
It's okay.
Oh, no. It's all good.
So that was chapter 11 of The Discovery of Witches. Join us back next time when we discuss chapter 12.
Bye.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening.
And thank you, Abby, for joining us.
And Abby, thank you. And we look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. You can find our audio channel at www.audioboom.com/channel/AllSoulsPod. Many thanks to Penguin Audio and Recorded Books for allowing us to use portions of the audiobooks in our show. Visit our website at www.allsoulspod.com. Follow us on Twitter at AllSoulsPod. Find us on Facebook by searching for The All Souls Podcast or email us at allsoulspod@gmail.com.